Human beings are hardwired to seek comfort, but comfort usually doesn't move us in the best direction. The good news about embracing uncomfortable today on Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman.
If we're able to, going back to this whole idea of time and pausing and really thinking about, do my actions reflect what's most important to me? We're reducing stress, discord, brokenness in our lives when we can embrace uncomfortable in the moment to align more with what we truly value.
Welcome to Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Five Love Languages. Today, author and educator Dr. Deb Gorton helps us face our fears while pursuing our purpose.
Have you ever grown when life was easy? I don't think I have. But the choices we make often are made by deciding what is easier rather than what's best for our lives. And we're going to explore that topic today with Dr. Gorton. And Gary, as you look in the rear view of your life, have you seen this principle at work for you and those that you've worked with, that the easiest path is often not the best path?
You know, Chris, I've seen this often in my counseling, and particularly with married couples who are going through hard times, and they're thinking, it would just be easier to get out of here. You know, I've had enough of this. I don't want to work on this. And so, you know, and sometimes it is easier to walk away than it is to, you know, do the hard thing. You know, when they do choose to do the hard thing and learn through the difficulty, man, they look back and say, I'm glad I did that, you know. And I'm looking back on my life, you know, and all the troubles Carol and I had in the early years. And man, I'm glad we didn't bail out, you know. I remember the time that our son came home from college and he put his right hand on my shoulder and his left hand on my wife's shoulder and looked us in the face and said, guys, I want to thank you for staying together. I have five friends at the university who are not going home for Christmas because their parents have separated since they left home. And he said, I know you guys had a hard time, but I'm just glad you stayed together, you know? That's kind of the serendipity moment, you know, when you're glad that you didn't run away and take what appeared to be easier. You know? Yes. And in the long run, it's not easier. But yes. And that's just an example. You know, that's just one part of life. But there are a lot of other places where the easy thing seems to be better. So I'm excited about our conversation today.
Let me introduce our guest, Dr. Deborah Gorton, G-O-R-T-O-N. She is the Gary Chapman Chair of Marriage, Family Ministry, and Therapy at Moody Theological Seminary and Graduate School. For more than 14 years, Deb has worked as a change agent for individuals, organizations, and emerging leaders, helping them refine, embrace, and thrive in their purpose. Built on the foundation of relationship, which is important to this program, her core philosophy is that collaboration and community produces radical transformation. We're going to find out about that today. Deb lives in Chicago. She's the host of the Becoming Well podcast. We have information about that, as well as our featured resource, Embracing Uncomfortable, at the website, fivelovelanguages.com.
Well, Dr. Gorton, welcome to Building Relationships.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a joy to be here.
We're delighted you're with us today. So tell us the story behind this journey that you've been on toward embracing the uncomfortable. How did this idea form in your life?
You know, it was really a parallel process. So I finished my PhD in clinical psych in my late 20s. And so I would say that my kind of formative developing adult years was this process of working with clients and also becoming, you know, more flourishing in my own identity. And so much as you shared in your work with couples, I saw in relationship people oftentimes kind of default to comfort and self-protection. And I did that in my own life. It's a part of, you know, again, like I said, embracing my own identity and challenging some of the fears and false identities that I had. And so as I started to really step back and look at where people thrived in their purpose and values, it was a willingness to kind of humble themselves and pursue those things that were uncomfortable in order to really experience transformation.
Yeah. Well, you say that as humans, we're rather hardwired to choose comfort. Why do you think that's true?
A lot of the work that I did initially in my PhD program was looking at the brain and studying neuropsychology. And so, you know, when we look at how we make decisions and how our brain functions, I love the authors of the book, Crucial Conversations, talk about the brain being wired for the path of least resistance, meaning without intentionally stepping into our decision-making, our brains usually choose for us what's familiar and what I would argue is comfortable. And so this intentionality piece that's required to make the more uncomfortable choices is critical. And, you know, again, it's kind of against the way we're naturally wired to just choose what is habitual and what we've kind of done over a pattern of time in our lives.
Well, I think most of us would agree with that, even if we haven't read the research. It just seems like it's always, you know, kind of leaning toward doing the easy thing.
Yeah.
Do you have role models who have lived this concept of embracing the uncomfortable?
You know, it might kind of sound cliche, but when I read scripture, to me, this is the essence of Jesus's ministry. He was so countercultural in how he met with and was in relationship with others, whether he was seeking out kind of the least and the lost or building community with those that the larger culture has rejected. You know, he strove to live out his values in a way that many would probably argue was very different than the leaders and the influencers of the time. And I really believe at its core, this is what is required of us to live out our purpose and values, is to say and to willingly choose, I'm going to embrace things that are uncomfortable because they're different than the average, they're different than the norm, they're different than what the people around me are doing. But ultimately, they're going to bring the greatest sense of fulfillment because they are aligned with what is most important to me.
Would you see that demonstrated at least in some of the lives of the medical community, you know, with the pandemic that we have been and are working our way through? They're stepping into uncomfortable situations, you know, those of us who are outside looking in on them, and they're doing it every day.
Yeah.
That has to be a conscious choice on their part.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I was reading something the other day about a nurse in the medical community who just chose to step in as part of her oath to help a patient without a mask. And ultimately, it cost her life. And, you know, those things are unbelievable in terms of the self-sacrifice that is happening. I see this with educators as well today. Some of my closest friends, my best friend is a middle school teacher, and the choices they make to take what is important to them and what, you know, fulfills them and put that to the side for the sake of the students that they are caring for right now is a huge testament to embracing uncomfortable.
Yeah. I think a lot of parents have a deeper appreciation for teachers than they did even before.
Oh, yeah.
But you're exactly right. Yeah. Now, you say that there's the myth of comfort. What did you believe about comfort earlier and that you no longer believe?
I think we have a tendency to unconsciously pursue what we think is comfortable. So one of the examples I give in the book is I live in the city of Chicago, and I made an oath kind of based on something my dad encouraged me to do, to walk to work every day for a year. And I made this commitment to myself in the end of July. And so, you know, it was beautiful weather, it was sunny, and I wasn't really thinking about what happens in Chicago in January and February and March. And as the months dragged on and as the sunlight got fewer and fewer and the weather temperatures dropped, I started thinking every morning when my alarm went off, what on earth did I commit to here? And, you know, I easily could see that on those days, or those dark, cold days in January, when my alarm went off, it was more comfortable in the moment to hit snooze and to stay in the warmth of my bed and get a couple extra minutes of sleep than make the sacrifice to get up and walk. But I did it. And the reason why was at the end of that year, and I still walk to work every day, by the way, the end of that year, I knew that I was more comfortable with the commitment and follow through to myself than the momentary discomfort, the embracing of uncomfortable that it took on those cold, dark days to get out of bed and stay true to my word.
Yeah. Yeah, that's powerful. You know, I think many people make New Year's resolutions, you know, every year of something they're going to do this year. And so many of them, it lasts, you know, 6 weeks, and then they go back to being comfortable.
So true.
When you do follow through, there's a physical and emotional reward, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, when it comes to kind of the core of the book is talking about how this is critical to living out your values and purpose. I find, especially when I'm working with clients, is so much of that incongruence and that internal discord they feel is because the choices that they're making are giving them momentary comfort, but deep down they know they don't align with what's most important to them.
Dr. Gorton, as you were talking in that last segment, I was thinking about the macro uncomfortable or comfort that we're looking for in the micro. And I have in the last few weeks seen this online as I am on social media, and somebody will say something about something. It could be political, cultural, it could be theological. And immediately what I'll do in my brain is, oh, well, that person believes this about that, and so I don't have to, you know, I can push that aside. That person is aligning themselves with this political party or this, you know. And what I gravitate toward is not looking at what, not thinking through what they've said or shared. I'm trying to fit them into some category so I don't have to think about it. It makes me feel more comfortable to be able to pigeonhole them. Is that one of the micro of comfort levels that we look for?
That is a great example. And something that is very common, right? We really struggle with how to stay in relationship or be in relationship with people we disagree with in this day and age. And I would say, one, we've really lost the art of listening to understand, like really seeking what is the motivation behind what this person is communicating. And instead, we tend to come at things with this posture of how do I defend my own position because we feel attacked. And, you know, again, I come back to this reality that that requires a lot of humility, and that's hard. And one of the things I talk about in the book is radical acceptance. And I think we've got this misunderstanding that radical acceptance or even validation is agreement. And it's not. It's simply saying, I hear you, I see you. And when we're able to do that, when we're able to really listen to understand and hear the motivation behind why somebody is communicating something, we get to the core of who they really are. Yes. And I think that also opens up the opportunity for them to give us that in return.
And Gary, you've talked a lot about this with relationship with children and how if you get stuck on, you know, my son or my daughter's listening to this music and I don't like it. Rather, you have talked about moving into that world. Tell me more about why you like that song rather than the judgment and you can't listen to that anymore. You're asking questions and then listening.
Yeah, because I think when we just come down and condemn the child, and often it's a teenager, then they feel rejected. You know, but when we enter into their world and ask questions about, you know, why they like this or what's the message of that and how do they enjoy that? And then, you know, they see we respect them as a person and we keep that emotional bond between the parent and the teenager. So we're talking about embracing the uncomfortable. But let me ask this. Is comfort always a bad thing?
Absolutely not. I think it's, I love the comfort of my bed on those cold days. Not say it's a bad thing. I think it comes down to, you know, and this is another question I know we're going to kind of talk about, but what are our values and what are our core values? And are we, you know, I see our values as what kind of guides and directs our everyday decision making. I value food and I value delicious food. I live in probably one of the most amazing food cities in the world. Chicago is renowned for its restaurants and its cuisine. I also value health. And probably more so on a core value level, really see the responsibility of stewarding my body to the glory of God. And so when I make the decisions, and I, by all means, I'm not saying I do this perfectly every day, but when I make the decision of what I'm going to eat, food and satisfying a hunger is a value to me, but the core value of stewarding my body is the decision through which I sift that lens through. And so it's, you know, kind of just taking it back to the question of comfort and whether or not it's good or bad. if I value Sabbath and rest, then on some level, the comfort of a nap or a warm beach or, you know, a vacation actually represents a core value.
Yeah, I can see that. That's why I'm looking forward to going to the beach in June.
And why I'm slightly jealous of
with
you.
My whole family. Well, on the other hand, is discomfort always a good thing?
Yeah.
And if not, is there a time not to embrace discomfort?
Yeah. I think what it comes down to is, you know, kind of discerning again what our motivation is. And I think, unfortunately, we can oftentimes feel like we need to put ourselves in uncomfortable situations or pursue discomfort at the loss of our own identity and value. You know, I see people kind of taking the approach of feeling like I need to sacrifice myself, my core worth and my core identity for this other person, whether it's because they've been in an unhealthy relationship, perhaps it's marred by domestic violence or other things that have could have robbed somebody's core identity and self-worth from them. And yet they've created this false narrative around, well, this is what I'm supposed to do, or this is what I'm called to do, or this is the only way that, you know, I'm going to feel love, fill in the blank. It's a false sense of identity. And I think in those situations, you really have to step back and say, what's motivating or driving this? What about this is healthy or unhealthy? And at its core, what about this is actually a misrepresentation of who I am as a person created in the image of God?
Yeah. I've often seen teenagers pulled into that when, you know, they've committed themselves that they're not going to get on drugs, you know, but in the peer group, they get pulled in to that and end up making a decision that's not who they are.
Yeah.
You know, that's they've made the decision not to walk that road, but they yield to the peer pressure. So you talked about valuing things, and you're also using that word core value. What's the difference between values and core values?
Yeah. Again, kind of going back to this idea that our everyday decision-making involves things that we value. And when we make those decisions without really consciously thinking about the why or the what behind them, that's where I think they can actually rub up against our core values. To use an example, I might value walking to work. I do value walking to work. That's important to me. And today, as I came into the studio, it's been a while since I've been outside. I've been quarantined from the pandemic. And I could say, I value walking to work, but I'm running late. I hadn't planned my time accordingly. And so if I were just focused on that value of walking to work, I might actually miss a greater value, maybe not necessarily my core value, but kind of hierarchical value of actually my core value is relationship and respecting relationship. And to me, that's following through on a commitment and showing up on time. So if I look at my decision of how to get to work, and I sift it through the core value of prioritizing relationships and respecting those I've made a commitment to, I'm going to say, well, it's important for me to walk to work. I didn't create enough time and space to be able to do that. So instead, I'm going to ride my bike or jump in an Uber or figure out another way that's going to get me there more quickly. So, you know, kind of coming back to this idea that our values guide our decisions every day. They motivate us, but it's the core value that we sift our values through that really aligns with what's most important to us.
Like, do you have like a list of core values? You said your core values are relationships, but do you have a list of core values for yourself, and do you encourage others to do that?
I do, yeah. I have 5 core values that I have got written in various places around my apartment and on my smartphone so that I'm reminded of those every day. I'm happy to share those. I also find, though, that when I do, other people immediately kind of try to embrace those as their values, which is not a bad thing, but I want people to feel encouraged to really tap into who they are and what's most important to them. I also, in the book that I wrote, have just a list of samples of core values that I've collected from different places, the internet, conversations with people, kind of my own qualitative, unofficial study over the years of working with clients. And I do think it's really important that we take the time to figure out what those core values are.
Yeah. Why don't you give us 2 or 3 of yours, just so the folks get a flavor of that.
Absolutely. So my number one value is Jesus. That's to kind of emulate everything that he models for us, which I guess you could say kind of encapsulates every value. But my second is relationship. My third is wisdom. My fourth is authenticity. And we'll keep my fifth as a surprise, although it is in the book, too.
Okay, that's fine. I think that some of our listeners maybe are not familiar with that, even the concept of core values. They have them, but they don't think of them as core values. They're kind of there, you know, and bringing it to the front burner and kind of really thinking about it, I think, is a good exercise.
Yeah, exactly. It's usually a question I end up asking clients, and I'm amazed. You hit the nail on the head. We all know we have values, but we rarely take the time to discern and label what they are.
Yeah. What's the difference between comfort and contentment? And why does it matter?
So I think contentment is actually more of a discipline. It's a choice to be at peace and have gratitude for where we're at. And I do think it's also an emotional experience, but it's one that comes from the discipline of gratitude and acknowledging what's in front of us. Comfort, on the other hand, I think is a state of mind that we seek, and again, oftentimes unconsciously, because we really don't like the emotions that push against comfort. We don't want to feel anxious. We don't want to feel uncertain. We don't want to feel dismissed or discouraged. So I do think oftentimes where comfort gets into an unhealthy place is that we're avoiding taking calculated or healthy risks to develop and grow ourselves. Whereas I can be content in all situations if I practice the discipline of recognizing what I have and being grateful for that.
Yeah. So what Paul was talking about when he said, I've learned to be content and with much or with little, you know, in jail or out of jail.
Yes.
It's kind of that state of mind, isn't it, that you're resting in God.
It really is. And I also think it doesn't mean that it's absent of other emotions. I think a lot of times people feel like they're failing at contentment if they also feel disappointed, frustrated, discouraged, anxious, right? They think, I'm not content. Now, I don't think that the Bible says or that we even experience emotions in a silo. And so I think we can practice that state of mind or that discipline of contentment while also encountering other emotions.
Yeah.
I think it's almost important here, Dr. Gorton, to define what comfort means, because I had a listener push back on me when I said we've made comfort our God, you know, that God is supposed to make me all comfortable in my life. And the listener responded and said, but I want God to comfort me. He is my comfort. And I think she was using a different definition of comfort than I was. Can you unpack that?
Yeah. My definition, how I would look at comfort, is trying to find security in uncertainty, like trying to find that sense of certainty in order to find security. So if we use that definition in relation to God, it absolutely makes sense, right? Because in the midst of uncertainty, we know God is our constant. So we can find comfort and rest in that. And of course, I think of, you know, the Psalms, of the pictures that God creates of taking care of us, of leading us besides the still waters and filling our cup and protecting us from our enemies. So I do think in that sense, but then what are the other things that we're actually putting our comfort, trying to put our comfort in? Like, where are we trying to seek certainty in an uncertain world that doesn't promise that, and in security in things that we're not called to seek security in, and that in fact won't actually fulfill us?
You know, this week I was reading some of Oswald Chambers, you know, who wrote My Most for His Highest, and thinking about the situation that many people have been in over the last several months with the pandemic and all of that. And one of the statements he made was, trust God and do the next thing. I thought, that's pretty good advice in a situation when we're pressured and things aren't always what we would like for them to be. We have our comfort in that sense in God, and then do the next thing. If you got four kids at home, the next thing might be getting lunch for them or giving them a bath that night. But this is a very interesting topic, comfort and contentment. They're kind of cousins or sisters or brothers, it sounds to me like.
Yeah. I think they really, really do kind of parallel one another. And again, I think it comes back to this idea of a sense of security, right? Where are we placing our security in? Which, going back to how you opened up our conversation today, looking at this in relationship, too often, I think I see couples that I work with place their sense of security in their spouse. And now I'm not saying it's a bad thing or it's wrong. It's actually healthy to have conversations around, you know, like, how are we stewarding our finances and what are our priorities in terms of putting a roof over our head and caring for our kids and putting food on the table? Those are important things. But when the essence of your security lies in that, which we see the truth of when that security is ripped away, right?
Yeah.
Then we're getting into that place of I've placed false comfort or I've placed my expectations for comfort in things that are not guaranteed or promised and actually don't align with what's most important to me. I find that when I do have this conversation around what core values with people, I've yet to meet somebody whose core values are selfishly motivated, all about themselves. They're oftentimes much more externally focused.
Well, Dr. Gorton, in your book that we're discussing today, Embracing the Uncomfortable, you discuss some of the obstacles to that. You talk about justification, minimization, denial. Walk us through these, and how do we work through these things and come out at the right place?
I affectionately call these the three haters to change and, you know, see these absolutely in the lives of my clients and my own life, that oftentimes what prevents us from really experiencing deep transformation is one of these or even a combination of all three of these: justification, minimization, and denial. I'm going to use just my simple example of walking to work since it applies here, but I think you can really broaden this to most of what motivates our difficulty in moving forward. So let's just say that my core value is health and wellness, and that's why I made the commitment to walk to work every day. And so that's the decision that I sift my morning routine through. And, you know, let's say that I get up in the morning or my alarm goes off and it's cold, it's dark, and I don't want to get out of bed. You know, I might actually start justifying my behavior to support my decision to stay put. I might say, well, it's cold out. I've gotten up every day before this. What's one, you know, one day is not going to hurt me. I've been so good. I didn't know it was going to be this cold. I didn't really think this through. It's not that big of a deal, right? All of these reasons why I'm not actually choosing the uncomfortable choice. I might try to minimize the decision, right? That, it's really like, in the grand scheme of my decisions for the day, this one isn't a big one, or, you know, nobody really cares if I make the commitment to follow through on what I said I was going to do. It doesn't affect anybody else. I kind of minimize the impact of that. You know, I kind of see justification and minimization as cousins, so to speak. Denial is, I never made this decision in the first place, or it's really, you know, it doesn't really impact me at all. Like, when it comes down to it, this isn't really a part of my value system, or it, you know, really, it kind of refusing to acknowledge the impact of my own decision making on my life and the lives of others.
Yeah. So if we follow those thoughts, then we're far more likely to decide not to stick with what we had committed ourselves to.
Exactly.
Yeah, I could see that, especially in Chicago in the cold winter days. You could say, did I really say I was going to do that?
Yeah.
I remember my days as a student at Moody Bible Institute and those cold winds that came off of Lake Michigan as I was walking from Lawson YMCA, which is where Moody had rented a floor, and some of us, the freshman students, were over there. Man, it was cold.
It can be bitter cold.
How about the whole concept of, I just don't have time? Talk about that excuse and how it may get us off track from our values.
Yeah, I rustle a lot of feathers with this one, including my own. It's funny, when I went in to pitch the concept of this book to the publishers, I was thinking, you know, what's the best way to get this message across? And I thought, make them uncomfortable. And so I had everyone write down, what is one thing in your life that you would like to transform, that you've really struggled with? And so everybody wrote that down. And then I said, okay, now I want you to write down all of the barriers standing in your way, all of the things that have prevented you from doing this. And so I wrote that down. And then I said, now I want you to cross off everything on your list that's an impossibility. So I said, you know, as an example, let's say that you have made a commitment to enhance communication with your spouse. And an example of an impossibility would be that your spouse has moved to the middle of Antarctica, cut off all communication, and you have absolutely no possible way of talking with them right now. That's an impossibility. Here's the catch. If you wrote down time as a barrier to accomplishing your goal or experiencing transformation, that is not an impossibility. And I got a lot of really, really side-eyed glances. Because the reality is, and I think you know this, I know this, if God all of a sudden just, you know, created a different set of time factors in our lives, I was going to say snapped his fingers. I don't know, believe that God has fingers, but to create a picture. and we all of a sudden had a 36-hour day instead of a 24-hour day. You know, and I know, that in a short amount of time, people would all of a sudden still be saying, there's just not enough time in the day. So I have this belief that's really important to me, and that is every decision we make involves a loss. And we function from trying to avoid losses, but losses are inevitable. And so when it comes to time, in order to make those decisions, in order to create space to think about what motivates our decisions before we even make them, we have to carve out time in our day, in our week, in our month, to really reflect on what we've chosen to do, what we're choosing to do, and to say, this is going to take a sacrifice, that this is going to take a loss. And so is the loss of time. It's going to require saying no to people in your life, no to commitments. And it's also probably going to involve the discomfort of letting somebody down.
You know, what comes to my mind when you say that is, in my efforts to talk with people about spiritual growth, you know, they'll so readily say, "Oh, I want to get closer to God. I want my relationship with God to be more meaningful." And so I talk about a daily sit down time with God, in which you're going to read a chapter in the Bible and ask God to, you know, show you anything you need to be knowing out of that chapter, and have a little conversation with God back and forth every day. And so many people say, "Well, I just don't have time for that. You know, I don't have time for that." Well, you know, as you say, maybe you're going to have to give up a TV program, you know, a 30-minute slot on a TV program, or stay 30 minutes off of Facebook or something, you know. But if your relationship with God is more important than what you might pick up on Facebook in 30 minutes, let's make the decision, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it may be, and again, here we go, it's an uncomfortable one. We have to acknowledge and validate that. That is critical. And for me, it's sometimes saying no to somebody who's reached out to me and wants to pick my brain about something, you know, whether it's how I wrote a book or how I navigate a relationship. And there are times where, as much as it pains me, because my relationship with God, my relationship with core people in my life, because doing a good job with the things that God has placed in my hands to steward well now is important, is valuable to me, there will be times where I tell others no, respectfully and with care and dignity, yeah, and recognize that they also have the right to feel upset with me by me placing that boundary. It doesn't mean that just because it might upset them that the choice in my mind needs to be to say yes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now, you mentioned earlier the word validation, and you talked about validating people's thoughts and expressions and so forth. How does this impact our ability to embrace the uncomfortable in life?
You know, I think validation is something we've really lost the art of doing, both for ourselves and for others. And, you know, I've come to, in the last couple of years, really see the importance and the necessity of the practice of lament, really, really mourning and grieving for the losses in my own life, but especially the losses in others. And I think in a greater, larger societal sense, because that says your experience is important and valid. And it's the essence of who you are. Who you are as a person and what you encounter is important, no matter what it is. And somewhere along the way, we've mistaken validation for agreement. And so I think we fear validating people's experiences because they'll either walk away thinking we agree with them, or that by validating your experience, I'm minimizing my own. And neither of those are true. But I think this real essence of being seen and heard and acknowledged for what you're going through, what you've experienced, and where you're at today is really critical before any steps towards transformation can happen.
So if you are talking with a friend or an acquaintance, and they share with you a struggle that they're going through, maybe their spouse has walked out on them, let's say, and they're sharing this with you, you haven't been through that experience, but how does validation sound to that person? How do you express it to that person?
It's really looking for and listening for the underlying emotion. So I would say that has got to be one of the most painful, isolating, and lonely experiences. I can only imagine how that has challenged your view of relationships, your experience of yourself, and just the grief and the sadness that you are going through right now. It hurts my heart alongside you to know that you have experienced this, that you have been treated this way, and that you're having to navigate this right now.
Yeah. And even if they express anger, like they say, I'm so angry at him or angry at her.
Yeah, I would validate that as well. You know, I think this to me is one of my favorite things about the Book of Ruth. When you see Naomi return home with Ruth and her community of women come out to meet her, and she says, you know, no, Naomi, we're so glad to see you. And she's like, Naomi, don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara, because God has dealt bitterly with me. And now we don't get a picture of what happens after, but in my mind, those women say, okay, we'll call you Mara. And not because they're necessarily agreeing God has dealt bitterly with you, but because they know she's grieving and she's angry and she's hurt.
Yeah. A friend just recently, an older lady, was outside working with some flowers, and she fell and plastered her face on the cement sidewalk. And a little later, she said to her daughter, "Why did God do this to me?" Now, if I'm gonna validate her feelings, I wouldn't preach to her, right?
Yeah.
I might say, you know, honey, if I were in your shoes, I'd probably feel the same way right now. Doesn't mean we're agreeing with her,
right?
But we are validating the fact that she could have that thought.
Yeah, and you know, in my position, I don't know why either, so I don't want to even pretend that I know why.
Yeah,
I can rest in the contentment. So as we referred to earlier, of God being an all-powerful, all-knowing, and all-present God, knowing he has a plan for every part of our lives, but I don't know why this happened. So I'm not even going to pretend to guess.
Yeah. Sometimes we try to talk people out of their feelings and talk them out of their attitudes. Mm-hmm. But they are where they are. And if we were them and had their personality and saw things as they see it, we'd be saying the same thing.
Yeah. You
know? It's because we're uncomfortable with that. We are uncomfortable. And a lot of times, and you know, Dr. Gorton, how much I love scripture, but we can use scripture to distance ourselves from somebody who's hurting by using it to salve something that it's not our job to salve. You know, we can use scripture to just put a Band-Aid on something that is an open wound.
So true. And you're absolutely right, right? This whole process is so cyclical. We avoid validating and sitting with others in their pain because their pain is too uncomfortable for us. We can't embrace the discomfort of it. And you're absolutely right. We use scripture out of that context. And again, this is where I see like the entire book of Lamentations is a call for Israel to mourn the losses that they've encountered, so that when they step into the fullness of God's gift to them, they can embrace that. But in that moment, it is important and critical to acknowledge the hurt and the grief and the pain and the utter devastation of what they've encountered.
Before the break, we were talking about validating people's thoughts and feelings, and you distinguish between validating and radical acceptance of things. Explain the difference between those two.
Sure. At the very basic level, radical acceptance deals with our circumstances. And as you mentioned, validation deals with our emotions. And so radical acceptance is saying, this is where I'm at right now. It's not projecting into the future. It's not saying this is how things are always going to be, or things are never going to change, or being stuck in the past of if only this had never happened to me, or why did this have to happen to me. But the key thing about that past piece is that's where the validation comes in. So if we tell somebody, again, kind of going back to those minimization, justification, and denial, well, the past is in the past. You can't worry about that. It's not that big of a deal. That's incredibly invalidating for somebody who's gone through a history of trauma or loss or broken relationships, because those do impact where you are today. And so that's where that validation is critical. That had to be so painful. That had to be so impactful on your life. And it absolutely makes sense to me why you're struggling in this way today based on that. That's the validation piece. The radical acceptance is, and here's where you're at. Without judgment, this is where I'm at. And we have to be able to acknowledge that in order to then determine where we want to go.
Yeah. We are where we are.
We are where we are. And another key thing is it's not resignation. That's a thing too, people go, well, it is what it is, right? Okay, it is, but it doesn't have to always be this way.
In the book, you talk about incongruence. Define that for us and tell us how it can sometimes wreak havoc in our relationships.
Incongruence is one of the largest causes of stress in our life. And this concept that I referred to in the book is that internal incongruence of our actions not aligning with our thoughts or our emotions or our values. And I refer to an old social psychology experiment where they actually paid people, had two groups of people that they had to do a very mundane task. And one group, when the task was done, they paid them $1. And the other group, they paid them $20. And they asked them to rate how much they enjoyed the task. And the experimenters expected that the people who got the $20 would say, it wasn't that bad. You know, I could handle it. It wasn't too boring. I actually kind of enjoyed it. And they didn't. They actually rated it way worse than the people that got paid $1. Mm-hmm. And the idea behind that was, is people who got paid $1, in their mind, there was so much incongruence, right? I wouldn't sit and do something so mundane and so unenjoyable for just $1. So it actually must have been more enjoyable than I thought it was. We're constantly trying to align our actions with our internal thoughts, behaviors, and values. And when we don't, again, it causes this sense of stress, this reactivity internally. And so if we're able to, going back to this whole idea of time and pausing and really thinking about, do my actions reflect what's most important to me? We're reducing stress, discord, brokenness in our lives when we can embrace uncomfortable in the moment to align more with what we truly value.
Yeah. In what ways can community, and for the Christian framework, I think of the church when I think of community, in what ways can community support you as you embrace the uncomfortable things in life?
I would go so far as to say we can't do this absent of community, and for a number of reasons. One, accountability. Community, you know, is the people surrounding you and like Moses holding your arms up in battle. And so this is a difficult practice. It's not easy. And it's going to require those people in your life that you trust, that you can be vulnerable with, who are going to validate that key piece, validate how difficult this is, the emotional experience that you've had and are having in some of the choices that you're making. And, a big thing, too, is oftentimes the circumstances that we're radically accepting aren't necessarily solely a result of our own choices. We experience the consequences of other people's choices. You know, we can call it generational sin every day. And so radically accepting our circumstances when they're based on the decisions of others that are unhealthy and have caused damage in our lives is really difficult. And so having a community around you that can really support, encourage, and validate this experience is important. The other thing I would say is what your community looks like is key. Having a diverse body of thinkers who come from, you know, know, different ages and different walks of life is also critical, because we can get fixated on one solution to a problem or one way of approaching a task. That diverse voice speaking into our lives can really, I think, challenge us to think in a way that puts our values into practice for the greater good of community.
We were never designed to live alone. God said that, didn't he?
sounds a little familiar,
mean,
yeah.
It doesn't mean everyone has to be married, but we all need people our lives. Well, let me just ask you a personal question. What difference has embracing uncomfortable made in your own life?
You know, at the end of every day, when I look back on the choices that I made, while it's not always perfect, a great majority of the time I can say, when I've chosen to embrace the uncomfortable, I have lived according to what I value most. And I said, one of my core values is authenticity. So to be able to go to bed at night and to say to God, I believe today that most of my choices aligned with who you created me to be, placing a higher value on your creation than any of my own self-motivated desires and decisions, is just incredibly validating in my own life.
Yeah. Deep, deep satisfaction when we seek to live life like that.
Dr. Gorton, somebody is listening today who has this question. My spouse has just told me they don't love me anymore. They want out of the marriage. They're so frustrated. They are so angry at me for whatever reason. And I am sitting here in this uncomfortable place of now knowing something that has just surprised me. How do I use what you're talking about here? How do I embrace uncomfortable in my situation?
I would say the first thing is to stop and to ask both yourself and to consider your spouse, what are the emotions at play here? So I'm hearing hurt, I'm hearing anger. I can only imagine that this person is also encountering those same emotions. And outside of the circumstances, those emotions are incredibly valid. And so to say, okay, how can I first and foremost acknowledge those feelings for what they are, how they're impacting my spouse and how they're impacting me? And then once I'm able to do that, and that might take a long time, that might take more than a couple hours, that might take a couple days, a couple weeks, it might need to involve other people, close friends, wise counsel, a pastor, a mental health provider. And then out of that, then let's begin to then look at the truth of our circumstances. So it's that first piece of really looking at what we're dealing with, radically accepting right here in the moment, these emotions that are involved. And then out of that, what do we value most? And what is it going to take to get us to that point? And what am I willing to do to get there?
Yeah, because the first response could be being defensive and saying, well, you've never told me that before, and this is the first I'm knowing it. Why have you held this in so long? Or all of those things, rather than, wow, I have new information here that I didn't know. Thank you for sharing that with me. What I hear you saying is those types of things.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really loaded question, but you're right, because in the defensive response, what we're doing is we're not hearing. But also when we give the response of what you just said, wow, that's new information. I wasn't aware of this. I can imagine that's truly hurtful. What I think happens is we in our mind think, but that's not what happened. That's not, like, they're misrepresenting the truth or they're not acknowledging my experience. And it's important to get to that at some point. But it still doesn't negate the feelings the other person is experiencing, as well as your own feelings. And it is a very humble process to acknowledge that. And the key is here, again, it's not agreement, it's just validation. And it really does bring us into a more intimate relationship with one another, where we enhance the probability of at least being seen and heard.
Well, thanks for being with us today, and thanks for the time and energy and effort you put into writing this book, because I do think it's going to help some people and challenge some people to embrace the uncomfortable.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Deb Gorton has been with us today. Featured resource at 5lovelanguages.com is the book Embracing Uncomfortable: Facing Our Fears While Pursuing Our Purpose. Again, go to 5lovelanguages.com.
Next week, how to find the courage to fight for your marriage or your children or your faith.
The former lead singer of Sanctus Real, Matt Hammett, will join us. Big thank you to our production team today, Steve Wick and Janice Todd. Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman is a production of Moody Radio in association with Moody Publishers, a ministry of Moody Bible Institute. Thanks for listening.